Don't you think American troops in Germany are a deterrent to war?
Well, I think they're a deterrent to war today only, the number there today only in the sense that that Russia knows that if they attack them, they're going to find themselves at war with us all over the world. They're going to have atom bombs thrown
at
them. But then the Atlantic Pact, we have already undertaken to do that, whether there are any American troops there or not. Maybe if the troops are there, it'll make them think we mean we will keep our word. But we'll keep our word. I haven't any doubt about that.
Even in your picture, Mr. Baldwin, you have these forces in Germany retreating to Brittany, I believe.
Oh, you're talking about as of today. I was talking in a different time tense. As of today, it's quite obvious we haven't got enough troops to defend Western Europe. There's no question about that. I think we'd all agree on that premise.
Well, now, are we in great danger of an attack, in the opinion of you gentlemen?
Well, I have no information, Mr. Sharp. My view has been, from just talking with all the people that I've talked with from Europe and elsewhere, that the chances are against the attack. After all, the Russians for 5 years have held their own troops to the point of zone of influence that we gave them at Yalta. They have not moved beyond that zone of influence, as far as I know, at any point. And yet they could at any time. Probably have overrun Europe. They haven't chosen to do so. There has been a deterrent, and it hasn't been land troops in Europe because there haven't been any. It's been perhaps air, perhaps their lack of desire for that form of spreading communism. Perhaps they like another form. In any event, I think it's fair to say that the conditions today are not very different from these last 5 years, and so I think the chances are against their making an attack, but we have to provide for the possibility.
Mr. Baldwin?
Oh, before I try to answer that, let me just say that I think that the real deterrent in the past and the real deterrent in the future is not only air power, and perhaps not primarily air power in our prior monopoly of the atomic bomb, but American industrial power and strength and American ground troops. But as to the chances of an attack, I think a planned attack by Russia or a planned attack upon Russia by us is certainly highly improbable. But we're in a state of tension where something can happen. And I should say the odds are against war this year, general war, but not by too much, maybe 55-45.
Well, I you have our answer. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm going along with an increase of the army by approximately 400%. Or 300%, from a 13 billion army to a 50 billion army.
I agree, there's a threat.
Baldwin sometimes said that the Russian economy is so weak as compared with ours, for example, in oil and steel and in transportation, that it's preposterous to think of a Russian attack. You don't go so far as that.
I certainly won't buy that. It was the same thing we said about both Germany and Japan. You remember, it was said that Japan couldn't fight a war because she only had 7 million tons of steel production. She fought a pretty good and tough war.
You think the Russians have been stocking?
I don't think there's much doubt that they're not only stockpiling, but also, above all, they can funnel so much more of their production into military, purely military uses than we can.
But you agree that they probably fail, that in a long war, those resources would be insufficient against the United States, and that's the greatest deterrent, probably, to their starting a war. They might be successful for a while, but they're not confident of ultimate success.
I would think they're afraid of losing a war, ultimately.
And on the other hand, Senator Taft, you're reminding us that we are not all powerful economically, that we can't stand any rate of expenditure.
Well, no, that certainly is true. And particularly in time of peace, where it's a much more difficult job to, because you can't, in the world war, what did we do? We permitted the currency to depreciate 10% a year, a steady increase in prices, inflation all over the country. We stopped every building of every school building in the United States. We stopped every progress in every other line.
What would
simply to fight the war. Now, people will not do that in time of peace. You can't maintain their determination to that point or prove to them the necessity of it. And so, in time of peace, we're much more limited. We can't, in other words, turn this country into a garrison state and have a 10 million man army ready to strike the minute the war occurs. You have to do what you can to see that you have a completely your own position defended and are free to build up the ultimate kind of Army, Navy, and air power you'd probably have in all-out war.
What kind of a budget would it take to maintain an establishment comparable to that of the last war?
Well, the last war took half the total national production, which was then about $200 billion a year. $100 billion took for federal purposes, and I think this one would probably be $150 billion, half the present $300 billion.
Nearly twice what we have now.
Three times what we're contemplating.
I would share Senator Tebb's worry about the eventual soundness of our economy under any such strain. As a member of the Hoover Task Force Committee on the National Defense, I remember we warned about the dangers of Russian victory through bankruptcy, and I think they're certainly trying to upset our economy as much as they can. On the other hand, I submit we are not in a time of peace, and that extraordinary measures are required. Now, the whole thing is...
this budget, this $85 billion budget we're going to have is extraordinary.
I agree with that.
It is even more than what I saw referred to in the paper yesterday as a state of normal emergency.
But I tell...
Now, you gentlemen both agree that there's something more we can do. Give the impression we intend to stop just here. Is there anything more we can do in the Far East, for example? Have you ideas about the controversy that's in the morning paper and was in yesterday's paper about steps to be taken with relation to China, Senator Tass?
Well, my great problem in Korea is how we ever win that war or end it. I haven't seen any solution. I don't think the administration has proposed any plan, and in the absence of any such plan, I think General MacArthur's plan is worthy of consideration.
Are you in favor of having us bomb the mainland?
Well, I would say this. I'm in favor, first, of releasing Chiang Kai-shek, of arming his troops just as far as possible, and letting him engage in raids on the mainland, tie up with the guerrillas, make just as much trouble and diversion to withdraw communist troops from Korea. I think that such a course is obvious. I think it's ridiculous to permit American boys to be attacked in all-out war by Chinese communists and not use weapons that are immediately at our command. Now, whether we should go on and bomb China, I think that would be more likely to bring the Russians in. I think that could be held in reserve for the present.
Mr. Baldwin, you've been on Formosa lately. Do you think Chang's troops will help us?
Before I answer that, may I make one big point? What more can we do? And I think that one of the big things we can do is to get rid of the idea that things have settled down. Everything's much better than it was in the dark days of December. I share some of the apprehension that certain public figures have expressed about the state of mind of the American public. I think we've got to get used to living in a state of half war, half peace. Now, as to the Far East, I would agree with some of the things Senator Taft has said. First and foremost, I'd continue the war in Korea as long as we were exacting casualties as a ratio of 9 to 10 to 1, and as long as we're tying up the flare of the Chinese Communist Army. I would not bomb in Manchuria as yet, and unless the safety of our troops required it, for the sole reason that I think it would be not only politically disadvantageous, but would probably bring in Chinese Communist air power and perhaps Russian air power, and therefore deprive us of the military advantage. I would certainly build up Formosa starting immediately. The big lesson to me that I got out of my trip there last year was we must use Asiatics to fight Asiatics. And I think that is the biggest lesson we have to learn.
I agree, because why are the Chinese communists attacking? As I don't think the satellite countries in Europe would ever attack. They're attacking because they're attacking the white man to drive him out of Asia. That's the way the picture appears to them. And it seems obvious to me that we must have Chinese on our side.
Mr. Baldwin, you sometimes hear great skepticism expressed about what Chiang's men could do in China now or in any immediate future. Do you think anything could be done within a year with them?
Yes. I think there's been a lot of oversimplification of that. There is a potential on Formosa. So far, it's only a potential. There are many things remaining to be done. But unless we start, they can't be done. And a big start should be made now. They could conduct raids. The Nationalist Navy could carry out a limited blockade of Shanghai as it was doing before last June, and the Nationalist Air Force could carry out some raids against the mainland. Also, commando-type raids. 6 months to a year from now, those troops could be well-trained and well-equipped. They are not ready now.
We have to go back around the world, I suppose. Senator Taft, would you do anything about Yugoslavia and Iran?
I'm afraid I'm not prepared to say any more, apparently, than the administration, exactly what should be done in case of a Russian attack on those countries. I think we should do whatever we think we can get away with. My only limit on the action against the communists, expansion of communism, is to do those things and plan to do those things which are practical.
You think we could state a position that we were going to maintain there?
Well, I think first we can state a very clear position vis-a-vis Germany and Japan. Rearm them. See them reemerge as great powers. Restore some balance of power in the world. As far as Yugoslavia is concerned, I certainly would tend to re-equip that army and make it clear that if the Russians used force to eliminate Yugoslavia, they would have to be fighting the West.
You would strengthen our position in the Mediterranean, Mr. Baldwin.
Very definitely. The Mediterranean is a weak link now, it seems to me, in the whole Atlantic Pact area.
Well, I agree to that, and it seems to me that an attack on Russia, the attack on Russia, can't come from Western Europe. The attack on Russia should come from the Mediterranean. And in any war with Russia, we ought to be prepared to be on the attack rather than constantly defensive.
We are in very general agreement that something more can be done, that war is not imminent, that we hope foreign policy will avoid the necessity for a war, that we are in a strong position in case war does come, and that we can expect a victory. We hope a victory not only in war, but in winning the peace.
Thank you, gentlemen. Taking part in today's University of Chicago Roundtable on How Can We Best Defend America were Robert A. Taft, United States Senator from Ohio, Hanson Baldwin, military analyst of the New York Times, and Malcolm Sharp of the Law School of the University of Chicago. The printed pamphlet of today's roundtable discussion on How Can We Best Defend America contains the full text of the discussion and reprints of Senator Taft's recent speech on military aspects of our foreign policy. Be sure to write to the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois, to secure your copy of today's pamphlet. Single copies are 10 cents in coin. A full year subscription to the roundtable pamphlet costs only $3. Enclose $3 with your order and make your subscription begin with today's program. To repeat the address, the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois. Next week, the roundtable discusses, is Freud up to date? Be sure to hear the views of Dr. Ernst Christ and Professor John Dollard of Yale University in this unusual roundtable discussion. May we invite you to join the new roundtable home study courses in human rights, world politics, and economics in the modern world. These courses are open to all, and two of them are college credit courses. You may enroll and begin at any time. Write the University of Chicago Roundtable, Chicago 37, Illinois, for the brochure describing the courses and telling how you may register. Each month, three 24-volume sets of Encyclopedia Britannica are awarded to the students in the three home study courses most successfully completing the course in that month. Today's program originated from WRC, Washington, D.C. The roundtable is directed by George E. Probst and is an NBC public service presentation.